This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now the U.S. has at the helm again President Donald Trump, a believer in weaponizing tariffs against even America's closest trade partners to make up for deficits in trade. Now to simplify this, imagine my business with you. I sell your business $1,000 of goods a week, and I buy $2,500 of goods from your business, so we have here $1,500 in trade deficit. Now imagine, to bring the trade closer to a balance, I decide to tax your goods, which, by the way, gets kind of passed on to my end user, but that is what a tariff is. Most economists believe it is dead wrong policy, which will lead to high inflation, slow economic growth, hurt U.S. workers, and that Americans will eventually foot the bill. The many dimensions of Donald Trump's tariffs regime is a focus of today's Spotlight program.
The clock is ticking as the world might witness a trade war. Prompted by the U.S. president's imposition of a 10% tariff on imports from China and a 25% tariff on both Canada and Mexico. The outcomes of these tariffs could not only impact the North American economies, but also set a precedent for global trade. Beijing is strongly dissatisfied with Trump's move and firmly opposes it, vowing a challenge at World Trade Organization and taking other countermeasures. However, China's Commerce Ministry did not specify its planned countermeasures. In a separate statement, China's Foreign Ministry said there are no winners in a trade war or tariff war. Canada and Mexico, as U.S. neighbors, have been preparing for the trade war and ready to hit back, marking the apparent start of a trade war between the three neighbors.
I am announcing Canada will be responding to the U.S. trade action with 25% tariffs against $155 billion.
As for U.S. southern neighbor, Mexican president ordered retaliatory tariffs in response to the U.S. decision to slap 25% tariffs on all goods coming from the U.S. In a post, the Mexican president confirmed that she has instructed her economy minister to implement the plan, which includes tariff and non-tariff measures in defense of Mexico's interests. Trump started this war over after accusing his neighboring countries of doing nothing to stop the illegal flow of drugs and immigrants across the United States' northern and southern borders. But will he be able to control the outcomes?
And tariffs don't cause inflation, they cause success. Cause big success. So we're going to have great success. There could be some temporary short-term disruption, and people will understand that.
The harsh truth is that the international economic relations can create real vulnerabilities, and the United States trading partners have had time to prepare for such actions. Trump's new tariffs tells the world that Washington's trade treaty commitments come with a warning. Trading partners must support U.S. policy priorities. It signals that Washington no longer considers international trade to be either agreeable or always beneficial.
And now for our guests. Joining us, we have Mr. Mike Harris, finance editor at Veterans Today, joining us from Portland, Oregon. And also Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program here. I guess Mr. Mike Harris, we'll start with you. So Canada and Mexico slapped already with 25% duties. China gets 10% above the current tariffs. And Canada immediately strikes back. This is, by the way, something we didn't see in the first term where Donald Trump was aggressive with initial tariffs. Strikes back with 25% tariffs on over $155 billion of U.S. goods. How good is this for U.S. and Canadian consumers, sir?
Well, for consumers, it's not good at all. However, given the trade imbalances between Mexico and Canada, what Trump is trying to do is leverage both of these countries to assist the U.S. in stopping the crisis at the southern border primarily, but also at the northern border with illegal immigrants coming in and particularly the drug problem coming in. Whereas Mexico in particular has profited greatly off of the drug trade, and their cartels are some of the richest, most powerful criminal organizations of the world now. So Trump is trying to leverage both Canada and Mexico into assisting the U.S. in law enforcement for these particular issues. If these issues didn't exist, this tariff problem wouldn't exist either.
Okay, thank you for your first take there, Mr. John Bosnich. Welcome to the program here, sir. Thank you for your patience. Now, this policy Trump kicked off in his first term, we very well know, saying it to some degree it will bring back industry, if you remember, back from you said China, from Mexico. That, I mean, and he had Toyota, he had Nissan set up a couple thousand jobs, but basically more grandstanding there. He fell far short of the project of getting a bunch of car industries and other industries back into the U.S. soil, having plants spring back up in Detroit and whatnot. Nevertheless, your initial thoughts, and now that he wants to get the Europeans involved, the fallout that you see lying ahead as a result of these tariffs?
Well, I'm an unusually rare Canadian in that I welcome these tariffs from Trump. I'm actually overjoyed that Trump is doing this, because the Canadian colonial puppet society that has been sucking on the hind tit of the American war beast is finally being freed by the company, by the country that has occupied and controlled our country like a colony since World War II. 87% of the Canadian economy is owned by the United States. Oh. Our resources, our productivity is entirely focused on selling our country to America, literally selling our soul to America for American dollars. And now Trump is saying, sorry, baby bird, we're kicking you out of the nest. And as a Canadian patriot, I'm overjoyed that we're finally being forced to grow up. We were an English colony, and then we were an American economic colony. And finally, America, faced with better competition from Japan and from China and from the rest of the world, is forcing us to grow up and be our own country. It's just like Rousseau said, if given a choice, man will always choose the relative comfort of slavery over the challenges of being free and independent. Well, somebody had to make Canada independent, and it happens to have been Donald J. Trump. Canada is now going to have to fend for itself. If America is not going to buy our oil, if America is not going to buy our gas, if America doesn't want our water to put out its forest fires in Los Angeles, that's fine. We'll sell it to China. We'll sell it to Russia. We'll sell it to Iran. We'll end our crazy American-dictated sanctions on Iran. And we'll start being an independent country and dealing with the rest of the world, not down the barrel of the American gun, but through the maple leaf flag of friendship, which we used to think about as our country.
And thank you there. And Mr. Harris, I want to come back to you, if I could. You mentioned Trump says he wants Canada and Mexico to stop the flow of illegal immigrants coming into U.S. soil, and for Mexico to curb the illegal drug trade, all the illicit drugs getting in, methamphetamines, cocaine, heroin, and in the last dozen years plus fentanyl getting into the U.S. and resulting in many overdoses and fatalities, you very well know. But his policies, don't they instead invite kind of a breakdown of trust and cooperation instead of strengthening and promoting the Mexicans to get on board with a collaboration to the end of stopping the flow of migrants and the drug trade?
Well, the United States has been trying to stop the flow of illegal aliens and the drugs for a very long time, with little to no cooperation from Mexico in particular. Canada has been a relatively good neighbor, I have to say. But Mexico has been adverse to the United States since they signed the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in 1848, March 15th. They have been adverse to the U.S. and have supported all of our enemies in every war. The Germans in World War I and II, Russia and the Soviet Union, the communists in the Cold War, Mexico has always supported. So they are not a warm, friendly country to us. They pretend to be, but they're extremely adversarial to the United States. So they've been encouraging the cartels because the cartels and the drug traffic has been very, very good for their economy. The illegal alien problem that we suffer in this country has been very good for their economy. In fact, the remittances that are sent back from the illegal aliens working, taking jobs from deserving Americans, working under the prevailing wage, is one of the largest sources of revenue that the country of Mexico has. And so we can take that away from them, too, by interdicting any remittances that are sent back to Mexico via Western Union or MoneyGram or any of these other services that send money, transfer between countries internationally. So these things can be done, but Mexico has not been a good neighbor to us, and it's time to get a little hard with them. It's time to flex a little muscle and say, hey, look, you're going to help us with this problem, or you're not going to enjoy the benefits of open and free trade. You're going to have to pay a tariff, and that tariff is going to escalate unless we see results that are satisfactory for us.
And Mr. Bostich, when it comes to the Europeans and Canada, and more so the Europeans, because here is Trump, if he imposes on the Europeans, how do you see that impacting the status quo when it comes to political and military ties he has with the Europeans. You know that NATO is basically at the U.S. behest. Wherever the U.S. Points a finger, NATO goes. So how does this impact that arrangement, or do we see a breakdown basically in those departments as well in U.S. NATO leadership?
Look, NATO has just been America's foreign legion for all these years. A bunch of colonies, marionette countries like Canada, like the European Union, which was created by America. Don't let anybody ever tell you that the European Union was created by Europeans. Mm. Europe was occupied militarily by America. America didn't want to do all the heavy lifting anymore, so they forced the Europeans to create the European Union, a United States of America that was remote controlled from Washington, just like NATO. If you think that NATO makes decisions without America's consent, you're crazy. When America talks about taking over Greenland, do you think that NATO is going to defend Greenland from a foreign invader if America is the invader? Absolutely not. Canada has been an American colony since World War II. We had the most advanced fighter jet in the world. It was called the Avro Arrow. It was generations ahead of the F-16. America picked up the phone and ordered our prime minister to melt the aircrafts down. They were cut apart with chainsaws. All of our brightest engineers went down to America, and they did a little project called the Apollo moon landing. That was done by Canadians who left Canada because our Canadian government was a colonial administration of the American Empire. We have been a colony for decades. Canadians, listen to this. I wrote the LSAT to do the law school admissions test here in Canada, to go to law school in Canada. Where were those law school tests marked? They had to be shipped from Canada to America with my fingerprints on my test to go to America to find out whether I could go to school in Canada. I was the only student among 450 students who wrote the LSAT in one hall who refused to put his fingerprints on his test when they told me they would not guarantee that my fingerprints would not be given to the CIA. Canada has been an American colony for my entire life. I was born in 1961 in the American colony of Canada, and today, the American president is setting my country free. Thank you, Donald Trump, for doing what you don't understand you've just done.
Interesting take there, Mr. Bosnich. And Mr. Harris, analysts and energy traders, they've predicted U.S. motor fuel prices are likely to rise due to the tariffs on Canadian and Mexican oil. Now, and also with respect to Canada, there's going to be a drastic rise in Chinese products, which really every other product coming into the States, you very well know, being such a consumer society, the U.S. is possibly the number one when it comes to buying consumer goods in the world. And if that gets passed on to the consumer, how's that for the very people that pretty much the working class that put Donald Trump in office?
Well, short term, it's going to be tough for the consumer. But longer term, if these tariffs are successful, particularly with China and with Mexico, and it drives manufacturing back into the United States, you have to remember that Bill Clinton signed a NAFTA GATT, let China into the WTO, and also signed the free trade agreement between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And this really decimated U.S. industry. If you recall Ross Perot when he ran for president against George Bush, I forget the year. But anyway, he said that giant sucking sound you hear is U.S. jobs leaving for Mexico. And he was wrong. They didn't go to Mexico. They went, a lot of them did, but most of them went to China. And what I think Trump's longer range goal here is to give these tariffs, to give manufacturers an advantage here, a domestic manufacturing advantage, a price advantage, to where they can retool and bring manufacturing back into the U.S., which is going to be good for the consumer because it's going to create an entire new class of manufacturing jobs. And it's going to help the United States get rid of these trade deficits that has been running out of control since Bill Clinton was president. So there is an upside here. I think what Trump has is a longer strategic plan to restore the United States to its former manufacturing prowess. You know, we were the manufacturing giant of the world. That's what helped win World War II, as the other guest has said. That's when Canada became a colony. But it also has been dissipated since George H.W. Bush began the process, but it was really finalized under Bill Clinton, to where that giant sucking sound that Ross Perot alluded to was manufacturing jobs leaving the United States. And really, we've hollowed out our entire economy here. We've gone from being a producer of goods and services that actually create value, create wealth, to being financial managers. And we create virtually nothing in this country. Everything we buy, we couldn't make a hammer in this country. But Trump is trying to drive this back home, bring manufacturing back. And by putting tariffs in, it gives domestic manufacturers an advantage to manufacture in the U.S. versus manufacturing in a low-wage country like China or Mexico.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because I want Mr. John Bosnich, if you could speak a little bit on when it comes to China. We know that there are a number of issues between the U.S. and China that they're kind of on a pseudo cold war in when it comes to the South China Sea, when it comes to trade, when it comes to intellectual property, when it comes to many other issues, when it comes all throughout the world, Russia, Ukraine, the West Asia. China and the U.S. have been on opposite ends of the spectrum for quite some time now. How does this added, basically, dimension to the trade war between the U.S. and China impact that?
Look, America is the victim of its own greed. This has got to be said here. Although I am sounding like I'm criticizing what Donald Trump is doing, I am a massive supporter of Donald Trump. Why is that? Because Donald Trump is forcing Americans to work if they want to earn money. They are not going to earn money on the backs of Chinese slave laborers hired by American offshore companies in China. Henry Kissinger went to China in 1973 and opened up the Chinese market, not to help the Chinese, but to help American capitalists make bigger profits by paying Chinese workers less than they could have ever paid an American worker. This business about the Mexicans being responsible for drugs coming into America is laughable. Timothy Leary was a professor at Harvard University, an American-born American professor. It was Timothy Leary who told his students in class at Harvard, take LSD, take acid, drop in and drop out. That's America that wanted those drugs. It is America that has legalized marijuana. It is America that is sucking drugs out of Canada and out of Mexico because American citizens want drugs because they're drugging themselves to escape the kingdom of mammon, the kingdom of greed, where they are just turned into slave laborers for a dollar. And their dollar says, in God we trust, right on it. But it's illegal in America now to say anything about God because they don't believe in God. Their God is money. And the devil of worshiping money is you draw drugs into your country. Mexico was not a drug-producing country until America started offering top dollar for Mexican farmers to stop growing corn and start growing marijuana and start growing every other drug. America brought it on themselves.
Thanks, John. I have about a minute left. I really want to get this last question because Mr. Harris mentioned something. Mr. Harris, I want you to elaborate on this because you mentioned the short term, and economists have said that in the short term, it's going to be bad, these tariffs for American end users and consumers. But nevertheless, to your point, that it may benefit the U.S. in the long term. But with the current political divisions we have, I mean, you would have to see continuity. We'd have to see the next couple presidents basically promoting Donald Trump's agenda, and that's something we've never seen with this polarized dimensions of the political apparatus in America today.
Well, America is on the verge of a revolution in this country. We've got two sides of it. One is the patriotic side that wants to get rid of the capitalist system that has raped and pillaged the American middle class and destroyed it, and the other side wants to take us into a Marxist utopia. So we're looking at perhaps a civil war, perhaps a revolution here in the United States. I agree with the other guests that the powers that be have directed foreign policy have been nothing but greedy, but they've damaged their own citizenry here. They've damaged the people of the United States and taken away so many incomes and so much livelihood from our own people that they've hurt ourselves. They have destroyed their market. And, you know, you look at a company like Coats Leather. They used to make all their products in the United States. They moved their manufacturing overseas. Now they make them in China. The prices haven't gone down, but they got rid of the high-wage American workers who are now unemployed or working at lesser jobs, okay, making a fraction of what they used to make. And so Donald Trump, by trying to bring this employment, bring these jobs back into the U.S., get rid of the illegal labor in this country so we can work on American wages for American products, it is a positive move in the long term, and that's where this needs to go.
Gentlemen, thank you both for putting the time in and joining us on our Spotlight program here on Press TV. Stay safe to both of you. Mr. Mike Harris there, finance editor at Veterans Today. They're joining us out of Portland, Oregon. And John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. And this brings us to the end of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And may great peace and blessing be upon Prophet Muhammad and his household. Assalamu alaikum, my dear audience, brothers and sisters, and welcome to the series of talks for humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. Previously, we've been talking about different types of communications with different classes of a society. We talked how to behave our family, parents, children, spouses, friends, relatives, and how to behave the other mu'mineen in a society, how to communicate with transgressors, how to communicate with hypocrites in a society. But the question arises that we might live in a society that the majority are non-Muslims. All the previous episodes were how to communicate with Muslims, no matter a Muslim is our relative, our family members, or a person in our city, or in our country, is a transgressor, a hypocrite, but all are Muslims. But if we live in a non-believer society and majority are non-Muslims, or a part of the society is non-believer, how to communicate with them? In this episode, we want to follow this issue. As I repeated several times, the very primary basic ruling and code for that is what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says. قُولُوا لِلنَّاسِ حُسْنًا. Speak kindly to people. And this very short sentence has a very comprehensive message within that. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not say, قُولُوا لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ does not say قُلُوا لِلْمُسْلِمِينَ. He does not say that speak to Muslims, speak kindly to believers, speak kindly to virtues. No, he said speak kindly to people. قُلُوا لِلنَّاسِ حُسْنَ. This is a fundamental code of communication with other people. No matter what kind of religion, what kind of sect, what kind of path they follow. قُلُوا لِلنَّاسِ حُسْنَ. This is in the way we have to talk with other people. And the way that we have to act. In another occasion, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أَحْسِنْ كَمَا أَحْسَنَ اللَّهُ إِلَيْكُمْ. Be good to the others, just as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has been good to you. That is very beautiful. أَحْسِنْ كَمَا أَحْسَنَ اللَّهُ إِلَيْكُمْ. Be good to the others. So both talk good, talk well, and act well. Talk well, act well. This is another code. And the third, إِنْ أَحْسَنْتُمْ فَلِأَنفُسِكُمْ. If you do good, you will do good to your own souls. Do not think that, okay, that I now that I am acting good to this person, I'm doing a kind of kindness. I'm making a kind of mercy to this person. No, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that when you are good to the others, actually you are good to yourselves, because you gain reputations, you gain respect, and at the same time you gain the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And these two ones are very precious. So these are the fundamental instructions. Let's elaborate on that after a short break. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad ya muslimin sallu alayhi ala Welcome back, my dear audience, brothers and sisters, to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. We've been talking about how to communicate with non-Muslims in our societies. We said that the fundamental and primary instruction is to talk in a good way and act in a good way to the others. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala taught us that this being good to the others, talking good to the others, is going to have the advantage for ourselves, because it brings respect for us, it brings reputation for us, and at the same time it brings grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for us. Moreover, after all these instructions, at the same time Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala warns that although you have to be good to them, you have to be very careful in choosing your close friend. As I repeated several times, that having good relationship with all people does not necessarily mean that you can have friends, close friends, intimate friends from all classes of this society. No matter he is a transgressor, he is a hypocrite, he is not a believer, these are different, quite different, separated concepts. Because friendship is different from relationship. You have to choose a person as your intimate friend. You have to choose a person who supports your faith. Because if you remember in long previous episodes, we said that there are two types of bonds and relationships in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's book. One is empirical bond and the other is spiritual. And we said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala prioritizes the spiritual bond other than the empirical bond. Even at the time that my father, my mother, my spouse, my children become infidel, although I have to have good manners to them, I'm not allowed to let them influence on my faith. And since friendship is an element that influences our faith a lot, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that although you have to have good manners to the non-Muslims, non-believers, you are not allowed to have your intimate friends from non-believers. And by intimate friends, I'm separating, differentiating it from the general friend, because we might have friends in different levels. But your intimate friends, the ones who know your secrets. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has two terms in His holy book. He says, walija or bitana. Walija or bitana means the people who are very, very close to you. They know your secrets and you know their secrets. So these people, we mean intimate friend, these people should be among believers because they definitely are going to influence your faith and you definitely are going to influence on their faith. Okay, by this point, we are going to close the profile of different types of communications in the Holy Book. In this chapter of the series of talks for humanity, we tried to elaborate comprehensively different types of communications of a Muslim, of a believer, with other classes of a society in every level. And we tried to cover all of them. Thank you for your patience. Have a good time. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen.
Jannah, Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever. See you as well.
Islamic Revolution and Path of Progress. The fourth episode of this special series deals with the spectacular progress that the Islamic Republic of Iran has made in the defense and military domain after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Before the Islamic Revolution, the Pahlavi regime was a client regime and was dependent on foreign governments, especially the United States, in many fields, particularly in defense and military matters. This dependence was to the extent that Washington was the real decision-maker for the Iranian army. According to the evidence and documents, the Iranian army was the customer of Western weapons and paid exorbitant prices on arms and military equipment. Thus, the American military experts had absolute dominance over military decisions and policies. But the glorious triumph of the Islamic Revolution put an end to this humiliating state of affairs. An absence of authority in the military hierarchy. The victory of the Islamic Revolution in February of 1979 imparted a new spirit to the nation and domestic organizations and bodies. The key slogan, neither East nor West, but Islamic Republic, Islam is best, indicated the full scale of independence of Iran and getting rid of the hegemony of the arrogant powers, especially the United States. Since the very first days after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iranian experts and scientists did their best to turn the country into an exporter rather than an importer of military and defense equipment. For sure, this was not an easy task. The imposition of the 8-year war by the United States through its minion, the Iraqi dictator Saddam, aggravated the conditions for Iran. Yet, the war conditions set the ground for self-reliance and a thriving, successful young generation emerged. The Iranian youth started from repairing military parts to reach manufacturing very sophisticated weaponry and ammunitions. No doubt one of the outstanding manifestations of this defense and military self-sufficiency is the dazzling progress that has been made in the field of manufacturing missiles. The technology of short-range, middle-range and long-range missiles has been a very important military achievement for Iran in recent decades. This breakthrough has not only helped Iran to deal with various threats in the region, but it has also been a turning point in displaying Iranian technological and industrial prowess to the world. In spite of innumerable sanctions and financial limitations, Iran's missile defense industry has turned into the most powerful systems in the region and even the world. The Shahab, the Sejil, Qadr, Khorramshahr, Zulfaqar, Zelzal, Haj Qasem, Abu Mahdi are some of these missiles which have turned into a nightmare for the ill-wishers and enemies of the Islamic Republic. The Islamic Republic of Iran, relying on its own expertise and knowledge of its elites, has succeeded in placing a number of satellites into orbit, sending them into space with indigenous launchers. The Omid, Rasad, Navid el-Mosanat, and Fajr are some of these satellites which prove the country's technical skills and scientific capabilities in the aerospace industries. These native capabilities have not only set the ground for broad research and scientific infrastructure, but have turned Iran into a key player in the advanced aerospace sciences. These achievements have helped Iran move to the cutting edge of modern sciences. The Islamic Republic of Iran has made great progress in the field of manufacturing unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs. The Mohajer, Shahed, Sayyad, Ababil, Kaman, and Ghazeh are just some of the long list of Iranian drones which are used for a variety of applications. These applications include reconnaissance missions, spying and intelligence gathering, offensive capabilities, and self-destruct missions. Many military experts are of the opinion that the leap in Iran's drone industry stems from benefiting from the creative native technologies and talents. The main bulk of the capability has been achieved during the cruel sanctions imposed by the Western Iran, which have been illegal. The United States has imposed its toughest sanctions on Iran in the last few decades. Iranian armed forces have not been content with simply manufacturing missiles and drones. They have embarked on manufacturing huge destroyers, submarines, speedboats, hovercrafts, and so on. For instance, the Jamaran, Denar, and Sahand are the destroyers which have advanced radars and naval equipment and have been totally designed by domestic engineers and scientists. The Qadir and Fateh are two submarines with high capabilities in naval combat. All these breakthroughs have been achieved under the toughest of sanctions, especially when we look at the HR-imposed war on Iran, when Iran was denied even the most basic of equipment. Another great success of the Islamic Republic in the military field is the strategic and important field of air defense systems. Today, Iran's air defense systems, such as the Bavar 373 system, the Seraj, Mersad, Zubin, and Nawab, besides defending the airspace of the country, certainly communicate this clear message to the outside world. Iran is certainly no longer a client state of the West and is not dependent on foreign powers. The Islamic Republic of Iran is so powerful that it can guard its own airspace independently. Production of medium-range and long-range radars, too, is another indication of the high capabilities and skills of Iranian engineers and scientists. Another spectacular success in the defense field is the manufacturing of the fighter jet, Yasin, and making sensitive parts for military aircraft. All the aforementioned achievements in various domains of defense have turned Iran into an exporter of arms, equipment, and systems to over 40 countries. Iranian drones, missiles, and armored equipment have been welcomed in the global markets. According to the statistics, Iran's defense equipment industry exports have soared in recent years. This has enhanced Iran's status within the international community and strengthened Iran's diplomatic defense capabilities as well. The Islamic Republic has proved time and again that it pursues the policy of maximum defense capability in order to reach high deterrence against any foreign threat. The Islamic Republic has never sought weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons. This has been prohibited on the basis of a religious fatwa or religious edict issued by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Therefore, what Iran pursues is to create effective deterrence in the defense and military field to guard its own territorial integrity. Now the question is, why are Western media and journalists are hell-bent on showing an absolute upside-down picture of Iran to the world? The reason is that the enemies of the Islamic Revolution are horrified by the growth and advancement of Iran's status within the region and the wider world. A powerful Islamic Republic is the greatest threat to their vested interest and dominance over the resources and riches of the region and the wider world. Well, dear listeners, next time we will talk about other fields of progress in Iran after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Until then, goodbye and God bless.
Thank you.